welcome back once again to the We Don't Know Sports podcast. And, you know, we have a pretty fun show. We had special guest Ed Hearn with us. He is a World Series champion, but a motivational speaker, like, which we haven't really talked to before. So we're really looking forward to sharing that story. But we have plenty of other things that have taken place. We had Deontay Wilder get knocked out technically by Tyson Fury. So we're looking to get into that. Spring training has finally started, so we're starting to see some people get out there on the diamond and do their thing. The NBA is still going on. The XFL is still going on. I don't know. What else do you guys want to talk about? Like, what's been going on? How was your weekend? Let me start with that. I'm here with Mr. Brown and Canadian Biggie. Gentlemen, how are you?
I'm doing really well.
Of course you are. Would you? Canadians have to be polite. Like, you can't say anything egregious. You just lean in. I'm doing fine.
Yeah, and most you'll say is, sorry, move on. It's kind of a Canadian Midwestern thing.
Mr. Brown, can you bring anything of context to this?
I was doing better before I ate bacon and cheese crickets.
Well, we'll get to that, and, you know, I'm sure, I'm still,
the chocolate-covered stuff.
I think I ate a mealworm. I'm not happy about it. It was like dried pork rinds. Anyway, before we get to all that.
You got those trout lips.
Hey. That's offensive. Before we get to more offensive things, let me start out by first, you know, we were able to all kind of come together and watch maybe the greatest fight of the century. I'm not going back 100 years. I'm just starting at 2000, right? Like, is that the biggest boxing match we've had since 2000?
I mean, I've watched several UFC things we've got up for, you know, and everyone's got the hype of the UFC. And then I can remember the last time we had a boxing pay-per-view, right? Where everyone was all pumped up for, and it was probably Pacquiao and Mayweather, yeah. If you don't want to count McGregor.
But that was like so much past their time, right?
It was. And it's because they were just like hoping for that hope. Hoping for hope. Anyways.
Manny needed it for his presidential campaign.
No, I mean, like, everyone just wanting the boxing to get back to what it was, and right. It's not there. But then we watched this fight, and we were all hanging by a thread.
Like, we didn't sit down, right?
Every single round we were standing up. And I want to say, for the record, last week I shit all over Tyson Fury as well as Chad did.
I did.
And Biggie was kind of secret about it, but he was Fury all
yeah,
the
way. Yeah, let's just get out with it. Why were you but, so secret?
Hold on. Before we get into that, Fury, I just kept bashing him because he was a white dude, and Biggie even went to the further and said he was Peter McNeely, which was completely off base.
Terrible.
But I mean, Fury is the real deal, and he's a success story. He's lost like 100 pounds.
He looked in good shape.
He looked good. I mean, so I apologize. I was way off. I hadn't been following boxing because of how shitty it's been, but they put on a terrible. Good show. So why were you being in the closet?
Why were you so confident?
I had to hang out in the closet because I had some money riding on Fury, and if I had talked too good about him, he definitely would have lost just because I talked good about him.
Yeah, the jinx would have been in, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, am I not mistaken, did you even put money down on the correct round ending?
I did. I had him in round 7. As we were watching that, you'll see I was mighty excited in round 6 when I thought they were going to call it, and I wanted it to go one more round, and it did.
So that was a close fight, betting odds anyway. So it was Wilder and Fury.
It was almost like a pick'em.
So not only did you pick the right fighter,
you picked the right round.
Freaking round.
How's that happen?
Paid really well.
He is a professional gambler. No wonder we trailed him during the NFL picks all year.
I will say this one.
You're a degenerate.
Hey, I'm good. I'll take it.
You're still a degenerate.
Okay. Well, I'm the winner. One thing that I thought Wilder was a little overbuilt on was how well of a boxer he was. To me, he's really.
But he's not a good boxer.
He's just got that one hand, and he gets you with it. And when Fury caught him, what was it, second round, right on the right side there, and he couldn't really throw that thrust. There never really was a fight after that. Fury just kind of pounced on him a little bit.
He's not used to – Wilder's not used to being pressed.
Yep.
Well, and
he's used
controlled
to control the tempo.
Like, Fury controlled that whole fight.
Yeah, but, I mean, Wilder's not used to being coming at, and then now he's saying that because he wore a Skeletor outfit that was 40 pounds, that's why his legs were a little bit jello-y.
Hey, Big Van Vader used to walk out with his headdress on, and he never complained.
Neither did Shredder.
If I had a guy beating me so bad he was licking my own blood off my neck, I'd find an excuse to.
Like, there's so much to unpack in this freaking fight.
It was
crazy. And, like, what's sad is, like, we never talk about combat sports. Like, only when the big stuff happens. So, like, nobody cares what we have to say. But, like, we're intrigued, and we never watch this stuff. And like, I'm sure some people were watching this last fight and going, why are they doing a rematch already? Like, why not? Like, they're going to be made men by the time that fight's done.
I mean, even Tyson said, you know, you need to bite, not kiff.
Give him a kiff. I'm being serious. Ludicrous right now.
I like the comeback story of Tyson Fury. Put himself back in the gym, lost a belt. He worked hard, world champion, two belts. Donated his purse to poverty or house for the homeless or something like that. So as much as we talked about how well he did, he actually didn't make a dime off the fight.
I also heard that, I don't know if it's rumor, that Wilder fired his corner who threw in the towel.
Oh, I heard that he was going to.
So if he did that, which is completely ridiculous. And
they were trying to save him.
In my opinion, they saved him from being able to be able to do
Apollo Creed
fight, because he already had a busted eardrum. His mouth was busted open, and he had cut over his left eye. I mean, so the dude was taking some shots.
He wasn't throwing hands.
Right.
Like, he threw that one punch as they threw in the towel, and that's what he's like. I still had heart left. No, you were done, man.
He was done. It was clear. You all even said, like, a round or two early.
before.
When are they going to call this? And I'm like, they can't call this.
I'm like, no, he's not doing anything.
Let the guy get beat down.
He's just standing there getting punches and bunches.
He's not defending himself. And he wasn't.
Did he get concussed or something in, like, the third round? Was that it? Like, because remember when we were watching, we were talking about what his eyes looked like? And, like, in the first two rounds, like, he looked like somebody you didn't want to tangle with, man. He had that focus, that laser beam vision kind of going on. And then all of a sudden, when the third round was in, you know, he didn't look the same. And I was like, ooh, he may not be doing so well. And the first two rounds, let's be honest, you know, Fury won the first one, Wilder won the second one, but they were both super close. Third round clearly went to Fury.
After that
was an avalanche. It was over.
Felt like rounds 4 through 7 were just a repeat of the same thing. Once he had busted him on the ear, and anytime they'd tie up, he'd lean on that ear, put him in a little bit of a headlock.
Lick him.
Licking some neck.
What's it called when you lick somebody in your ear?
I don't know. I thought he was doing some.
It's not a wet willy.
I thought he was doing some necking.
He's doing a real wet willy. I don't know.
If he did fire his corner, I think that's a horrible move, because
they saved him.
His right hand, that's his hammer punch. He couldn't throw that from round 3 on, and he wasn't defending himself very well. They saved him. They're what allows him to fight in the rematch.
Did you see where people were posting videos from their first fight where it looked like Fury's gloves might have been, like, kind of strange? Or you saw that?
Yep.
Like, it was like he was actually hitting him with his real knuckles or something. I don't know. Like, it was one punch out of however many were thrown in this entire fight that went the distance.
I did see that. I didn't really follow too long around, and I saw a lot of comments saying that the European boxers, there's something they do. That's how they fight. That's how they look. It didn't stand out to me, so I kind of just brushed it aside as I lost, and here's why. Again.
It's like, you know, people want to say what they will to defend the fighter they thought was best, but let's be honest, what Wilder said after the fight was, you know, pretty humble and humility-laden type speech to talk about how the better man won. And I want to go out of my shield. I wish my guys wouldn't have thrown in the towel. Like, I was like, great, man. I respect the hell out of you for saying that and wanting to be carried out on your shield. Now it's all transitioned to Super Shredder being too heavy. Like, I feel like it's nothing but excuses. And if you're telling me wearing that stupid costume to the ring is what gave you wobbly legs, like, get the hell out of here.
I love the fact that unless you went into the fight with a preference, there was a guy you followed his whole career and you loved him, Fury comes in, King's crown on, rides to the ring. They get done, he's won, he takes the mic, sings the whole damn song.
What happens if Fury sprains his ankle getting out the float, you know, they carried him in on? Like, is he going to make that excuse? Like, it's not WWE, fellas.
Like, we were sitting talking on Saturday. It was like WrestleMania.
It felt like WrestleMania. I was ready to hear Triple H's theme music fire up. A little Lemmy and Motorhead.
Instead, he went with what to come in with?
Crazy.
Yeah, and lip sang every freaking...
I'm crazy for you.
Yeah, it was bad.
it's
every lyric crazy. He was lip singing.
He was, but
he sold it.
He did sing American Pie at the end, though.
Yeah,
And like, what's sad is
sang it pretty good.
He did, and like most of the crowd was like, I don't know this song because they're all freaking millennials still on the teat. They don't know a good Don McLean song when they hear it.
In that fight, one of the coolest things before it happened was having Tyson, Lennox Lewis, and Evander Holyfield in the ring together.
That was.
You got Tyson in the ring with a guy's ear that he bit off, and another guy he said he was going
to eat his children.
Yes.
I'm going to eat his children.
You got to love Tyson.
Only in Vegas.
Like Tyson, like the myth and the legend will always live on, and I think that's what happens. We watch fights like this. And you're waiting on the next myth to take place. Nothing against Evander. Nothing against Lennox. They were great fighters. But come on, man. Like, let's get some crazy. That's why UFC does so much better. I feel like you see the personality so much more. But then again, you don't have 15 different heavyweight divisions across the world with their own titles. Like, you can walk into a boxing championship bout and have four titles on your arms. Like, it's stupid.
If Fury left with two, they each came into the fight with a belt, even though they're in the same weight class. Fury leaves with two, and there's two other belts out there that he could fight.
Right, like, can we not unify these? No, everybody's got to get their cut of the pie. And I hate the way boxing is.
I think for a casual fan to even start to want to watch boxing, it's too confusing to understand who's the champ of this, who's the champ of that. Like, if you have a heavyweight division, welterweight division, whatever the case may be, you need to have a champ of each division and call it a day, because I like boxing and I haven't watched it in a while. I'm still confused on how many belts Fury has. Does he have all four? I don't know. And like, it's so confusing.
What is he the champion of?
Exactly. So like, they need to dumb it down and just make it what it is.
I agree. Why can't we get a boxing league that just controls all this?
I always just, it was just like watching the Rocky movies. Whoever won had the belt. There was one belt. That's all I remember.
But that was fantasy.
But that should be reality, and it'd be easier for all of us to follow it.
If only everything in life could be like Rocky.
Yeah, with four belts. WBC, WBA, IBC, IBA. Do you even know what any of those are?
WBO, XRC.
Hey, too big his defense. It did look like Drago versus Creed in this fight. So.
It did.
Fantasy like, came to life on Saturday. Yeah.
Throw in the damn towel!
And they did. They did. A little quicker.
So I have a confession to make. I have not watched anything from the Kobe Bryant Memorial, the public funeral, if you will, that they had at the Staples Center. So I'm going to rely on you guys to tell me a little bit about what happened. All I know is that the crying Jordan meme is apparently going to exist for another 3 years. Did you see it? What stood out? What happened? What did I miss? Fill me in.
I didn't see the whole thing. I saw Vanessa speak some. I saw Jordan speak, and I saw Shaq speak. And I saw LeBron was not anywhere to be seen.
Was he even there?
He claims he was, but
I saw this interview with him where he was like dodging the question completely.
He said he told him not to put him on the screen because he didn't want to take away from Vanessa and the kids, which whatever.
This is the same guy that was the guy that had to grab the microphone.
Right, when, right. So leading into that, like, he don't want to take away from the spotlight.
All
right,
fine.
Anyways, you have Michael Jordan, who never played for the Lakers, obviously. He's Michael Jordan, the icon of basketball.
There's a relationship with Kobe through competitive
balance. He calls him little brother. And so Jordan gets up there, and you could tell past players, current players, just media, everyone was just captivated and waiting and hanging by a thread, every single word he was saying, right? Mm-hmm. I felt like he owned that room. He owned the whole Coliseum or Staples Center. He owned it. Everyone was hanging on every single word that he said. Like, he had the attention. You could see the faces of Steph Curry, of, you know, Draymond Green, Russell Westbrook, Magic Johnson, even back, you know, who played with Jordan. Everyone was listening to every single word Jordan says. And all he had was nothing but good things about Kobe, you know, and he's kept calling him a little brother. And he kept saying, like, you know, he was stubborn and, you know, he's a pain in the ass at times. But then Kobe finally won him over through his persistence. Then he brought up the crying meme thing, which was hilarious because he found a way to bring, you know, comedy into it.
While he was crying.
He was crying. Like, he was bawling crying.
Jordan was self-deprecating in a speech for probably the first time that I can ever remember, and that, I think, is what brought it all together when I was
watching. Because that's not how he is
at
all.
That's not typically. No.
Yeah, I mean, we as fans and even competitors don't get to see that side of Jordan, and he made it a point not to see that side of him. So, I mean, that's why I think it drew everyone in, because they were like, holy crap, you know, MJ's tore up and, you know, we don't see him like this. So then he brought up the crying mammy. He said, I promised my wife I wasn't going to do this. But that's what Kobe did to me. You know, here I am now. I got to see this damn meme for the next 3 or 4 years.
That's the only thing I saw from this whole thing.
But it was a great speech. He did a great job. And like Shaq's was good too. But I felt like Jordan clearly had the room, and he did what was needed and what was needed to be said without actually stealing the thunder away from the family members.
So you bring up Shaq, and I'm not really sure what Shaq and Kobe's relationship was like whenever he passed. I have no idea, because they seemed at odds at so many times, like whether it be, you know, Shaq talking about winning titles without Kobe, then Kobe winning titles without Shaq, and then diss tracks that come out or whatever it may be. Like, it's ridiculous. So, you know, either way, I'm glad that it seems like for whatever point they were at in their life, like, at least they were comfortable enough to have Shaq come do a eulogy of sorts, right? I mean, that's got to say something. But hopefully, you know, that all stuff had been put to bed before he passed.
They went back and forth pretty good, but Shaq was at Kobe's last game giving him hell about – bet you can't get 50 tonight, and he got 60, and they kind of had smoothed out some of their differences, but it's kind of crazy that they could, with two big egos like that involved, because it went from diss tracks and Kobe saying they could have won more titles if Shaq wasn't fat. And
but I think Shaq, like, admitted that eventually, right? Hadn't he kind of conceded that? Like, yeah, I was kind of out of shape.
I mean, he did concede some of that. I mean, but Shaq also said, I mean, we don't know what the truth is. Only those two knew the truth, but he did say that we worked a lot of it out, and he says the media is going to say what they're going to say. Me and Kobe knew where we were, and we were good. But we don't know what good meant. I mean, you know what I mean? But Shaq seemed to play it off, which obviously you're not going to come out and say that.
We were at odds.
But, I mean, he seemed like they had made peace with each other. So I hope that's the case.
Is this kind of putting a bow on all this for now? Like, are we good? Like, is everybody kind of mourn Kobe? Are we going to remember him and just kind of move on now? Or what's going to happen?
I think what's going to happen with the lawsuit that we were discussing earlier, not on the air, whether it's the pilot or the company indirectly.
I've only seen the
this
company.
This isn't going to bed at this point is what I think.
It'll still be in the news.
So we're talking about Vanessa Bryant suing the helicopter company. Because they did not rule engine failure as part of the reason for the crash. So apparently the pilot had like a previous citation or warning or whatever about flying in bad conditions. And, you know, I hope they do justice for this as far as doing a deep, thorough investigation. Because for all we know, you know, you if you're flying around celebrities, how do you know that celebrity's not in your ear? I don't care. Go ahead and fly. Like, you don't know. Like, they're going to say what they're going to say. It sucks. It's a tragedy. I get that. And you know, if you feel like the company that hired the pilot is responsible, I understand that. I just didn't think it was a good look for that lawsuit to happen to pop up on the day of the memorial.
And that's where the media comes into play. That could have been something that was held off and reported later, but it was something that was in the works before the day of the memorial.
But it wasn't filed like that day. Time. No, it was filed that day.
But if you're in the know, you know that's the way that the family is.
But why would you file the day you're doing that?
That's a horrible decision.
Like, I'd fire that lawyer, whoever decided to do that. That's terrible. Unless you're, like, thinking that nobody will pay attention to it if we do it the day when everyone else is focusing on this.
All I know is it wasn't Johnny Cochran that put that together. He'd have known better.
That's because Johnny Cochran is?
Dead.
Correct. We got that one right this week, fellas. Who did we get wrong last week?
Bob Barker.
I was very excited.
He's 96.
96, still ticking. Don't forget to spay and neuter your pets.
That's right.
So I'm going off the cuff here on a segment that I'm not really – I don't even know what to say. We were talking about the movie Happy Gilmore.
Bob Barker.
And Bob Barker. It all translated over here. And we were talking about the actress. I can't remember her name, but she was in Happy Gilmore, and now she's on Modern Family, and how she still looks amazing. She's like a fine wine that just gets better with age, so props to her. And then Mr. Brown mentioned
Jennifer Aniston.
And I said that I was never that impressed with Jennifer Aniston. And you looked at me like I was from Mars.
You are from Mars with a statement like that. You got me all flustered here. I don't know what you're looking at. Need glasses.
Bye. I mean, do you not agree that sometimes Chad just says stuff just to be different? Like, he is so far off base
I'm
here.
I'm just honest.
Even for Chad.
Like, I'm honest.
I guess my difference. Point is, what are you gaining from this off the record? Oh, I'm cooler than you guys.
I'm not trying to gain anything. I'm just simply saying.
What do you win here?
Look, she's fine. She's fine. But I don't get why people get crazy.
She's fine.
No, she's not that fine. She's meh.
No, she's fine. She's
meh. Like, what is it? Like, what's her most appealing attractiveness to you?
So what makes you better than us because she doesn't do it for you?
Who said I was better than you?
But that's what you're saying. She's mad.
No.
Man.
I'm telling you how I feel, and I'm asking you guys.
You're in the minority here.
Being the minority, I've never seen this land of milk and honey before. So you tell me why Jennifer Aniston is so damn hot. What is it that does it that gets your jollies? Like, if you had to describe it to me like a graphic novel, what would you tell me?
I don't have to do that. I'm just saying complete package. Have you seen Horrible Bosses?
All right. So she looked good in Horrible Bosses.
Yeah. Would you not want to sit on her dentist chair?
I'm just saying everyday Jennifer Aniston doesn't do it for me. Just doesn't.
Because you have
I get Brad Pitt. I know why he left her for that dirty, I need to take a shower, Angelina Jolie. I get it.
She's got trout lips.
He's like trout lips.
Just like Chad.
I don't have trout lips. I can't breathe.
That is bad when you drop Jennifer Aniston for her.
Why is that bad?
It's bad.
I'm not saying for a stable relationship. Like, I saw her make out with her brother one time. Yeah. I'm not saying that. But...
He just wanted him a dirty girl.
And I'm not a big Angelina Jolie fan, but like I get it. Like, what's Jen Aniston? Like, she's just like, meh. It's just
let's just go to another segment because you're delusional.
No, I'm not delusional. Like I'm
let's do a poll.
I'm trying to give you
the page.
I'm trying to give you well, you can't just say is she hot or not? Because obviously she's a good-looking person. What I'm saying is...
What we're going to do here, we're going to stop you right here. A poll is the excellent, most perfect...
But what's the poll? You can't just say, like, do you think she's attractive or not? Because I think she's attractive. I'm just saying that I don't think she's like all that and a bag of chips like we said in the 90s.
So we're both on Jennifer Aniston as much as we can be. You can pick a counterpart and we'll put it up and see who wins.
Or something. No.
I don't like that.
Oh, because you know I'll win.
No,
you know I'll win.
I didn't say she was my favorite in the whole world.
No, but you're definitely exaggerating her.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, what is it? What's her most...
You need to pick someone that's her age or older.
What's her most striking feature?
Someone that's her age or older.
I will. What's her most striking feature that you find admirable?
I love it all.
No. See... This is what I'm talking about. You're like, I almost said something political, and we don't do that on the show. But you're like a political person who defends their political party without knowing facts and just says, it's just because how I feel. That's how I feel you're defending Jennifer Aniston right now.
In this debate, he actually has a political party. It's Jennifer Aniston. You don't know who you're
affiliated. These collars don't run, baby. That's how I feel. It's ridiculous.
I'm a married man, so I can't say exactly why on the air.
Oh, because
so
your wife's eyes are better, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
But let's just say, you're wrong here.
I've given you a chance to give me specifics, to give me something to look at on why Jennifer Aniston, give me somebody comparable. Who would you put a poll up against Jennifer Aniston?
We're not helping you out because there is
no. I already know who I'm going to put up there in that age bracket.
You're going with Wonder Woman?
I'm not telling you yet. I will be revealed on the Facebook page.
I'm talking about the original Wonder Woman.
Oh, Linda Davis?
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding. Linda Davis, was it?
Linda something.
Yeah.
Linda Carter.
There you go.
He's going Selma Hayek. Because you know that would win.
Dude, I would pick Selma Hayek over Jennifer Aniston. Absolutely.
But you guys want to give me a hard time for saying that she's eh.
No, she's not eh. Just because someone's better than her. Get off your high horse.
People talk about her.
Just stop. Like, that's why I'm bothered right now. You make her out to be like she's just some meth head and cross
lane. I know.
Like,
come on. If you were single, yeah. No one knows what cross lanes is.
Everyone knows what a meth head is.
We call it Cross Vegas.
Cross Vegas. Viva Cross Vegas.
So if you were single and Jennifer Aniston just walked up to you and said, Chad, just like with her, like her swagger from Horrible Bosses, and was like, you're going to marry me and you're going to spend the rest of your life with me. And you'd be like, nah, you're okay.
I'd be like, give me all your money. I'm coming along for the ride. This is fantastic. So it's terrible. That's the thing. See, I understand that she's hot because of money, and you guys think she's hot just because you like Greek women. Which said no one ever.
I like Greek yogurt.
It's off the rails.
It might be off the rails. That's just because whenever you're not in control, that's what you say. You revert to that because I disagreed with your narrative. And maybe America disagrees, but I'm allowed to have my point of view. And I'm just saying, on the Hollywood scale, she's a 5.
So on the hot or not, you're saying not because you have her as a 5.
I just split it.
That means it's a not.
Yeah.
That's a not.
No, a 4 is a not.
No, 8 and above is hot.
Don't backtrack.
Oh, no, I thought if you're splitting it, a 5 is splitting it, right? Isn't that right in the middle?
If I'm rating a girl and I call her a 5, I don't think she's hot.
All right, fine. 5.5. I ain't going any higher than that.
That's still not hot.
To me, that says she's average.
I'm going to give you We're doing a poll, damn it. I'm done with this conversation. I don't even know you people. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now, another phenomenal guest. He is a former major league catcher. He actually has a World Series ring back in 1986 with the New York Mets. He's the only player in history that I've been able to find that's won a championship at the single A, the double A, the triple A, and the major league level in 4 consecutive years, all with the same franchise. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And, you know, he's even a best-selling author. I think he wrote a book called Conquering Life's Curves, Baseball Battles, and Beyond. But more importantly, I think he's the guy that propelled Gary Carter to get into the Hall of Fame because he was his backup for a while. Is that a fair assessment? Welcome, Ed Hearn, to the show. Ed, how you doing, brother?
All right, my guys. Nice meeting you guys. It's exciting to be on here, especially when you introduced me as the man who propelled Gary Carter into the Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, you were the backup, correct?
Well, 1986, I was indeed. But you know, in August there, Gary hurt his little thumb and was out for 14 days, and you know, we actually did better without him.
I know you were an integral part of that run. So, I mean, you definitely, you know, made an impact on Mets fans. And what is it about the music video you guys shot? You had something to do with that. I apparently cult status with your appearance in the video for Let's Go Mets. Is that right?
You know, I was just being me. I mean, I think all the guys were just being me. It was kind of fun to do. If you see the video, they show you the making of the video afterwards. And I think one of the most poignant scenes is when they're just introducing the concept to us in the clubhouse. And I tell you, it went over like a lead balloon. There was guys were looking at him like, what? And, you know, I mean, the Chicago Bears, maybe. The shuffling dudes. But, you know, the 86 Mets, I mean, I think guys were probably afraid that something would get exposed that they didn't want to get exposed. You know what I'm saying, right?
It was the 80s. We won't judge.
Well, it was 86, too, in particular.
Well, that, I mean, That's a hell of a time to be a part of all that. And you were there for the ride. And, you know, like we said, part of that World Series team. So definitely, you know, glad to have you on the show. But before I get into anything else, you know, we're looking at your, I guess you're in your man cave, if you want to call it that. I'm not sure how you refer to your sanctuary there. But all I see is a couple big buckheads on the wall and some fish on the other wall. I guess you're quite a bit of the sportsman now. Is that fair to say?
Well, I grew up a sportsman on the East Coast of Florida, but I was a fisherman back then. Too many snakes to do any hunting down there in Florida. But when I moved to Kansas City, a couple folks took me on some fishing trips, and I came home and told my wife, honey, I think I'm going to have to hang these fishing poles up and get me a shotgun and a rifle, because the fish that they trying to get me to catch down here, we use them for bait back in Florida. So I did get into the – I just love the outdoors, guys. I think you guys understand from being where you guys are from, and the great outdoors is an awesome place to get out and do things. And I just really enjoy being out there whenever I have the opportunity. And I have been fortunate to have some opportunity up here in Kansas City to capture and take some really nice game. But it's really all about the hunt. I mean, it's totally about the hunt, and I love a wide variety of the outdoors. So I'm good with some deer, some ducks, some turkey. I enjoy it. And, you know, if y'all need any help getting any big bucks here in Pennsylvania, I'll sure come on out and help y'all, because I know they eat a lot of corn. And especially them ones with real big antlers, they can do some damage to some trees there when they get in there to rut time.
So easy now with the Pennsylvania stuff. We're West Virginia, don't forget.
Oh shit!
Well, so that way,
Mr.
Whenever...
Brown, I see Mr. Brown spit when I said that. So,
that way, whenever you want to do some, you know, mountain trout fishing, you know, you'll know where to come, and we'll definitely be your guides if you need us.
There you go. Well, like I was saying, you know, I've been blessed just like you guys to have some great country there in West Virginia. And you guys got a little bit different terrain than we got out here in Kansas, but it's all being about the great outdoors and being out there and just letting loose, especially these darn digital gadgets we got today.
Yeah, I 100% agree and definitely appreciate that sentiment. So to try to tell people a little bit about you, so former baseball player, awesome outdoor enthusiast, we see the evidence right there on the walls with you. But you definitely had kind of a unique life that kind of took shape after baseball. So let's start. I just wanted to ask you, there's a word I can't even pronounce, focal segmental glomer something sclerosis. What the hell is that?
FSGS.
That's a lot easier.
There you go. Yeah, that fits in with our digital age today, just shortened down to FSGS. That's the kidney disease that I had that there is no known cause, no known cure right now. And apparently I had it when I was – I got it between my junior and senior year in high school, and they called it my football physical for my senior year. And they sent me across the East Coast to Tampa to a big kidney specialist, and he wanted to do a biopsy. And I said, well, what are we going to do after your biopsy? Well, I can put a name on what you got. And I said, yeah, and then what? And he said, well, probably not much we can do, because once you have a little damage to your kidneys long term, you might be on dialysis or need a transplant someday. And I said, man, you ain't going to do nothing about it. And someday I might be. No, that's all right. I'll be fine. So I went all about my business. And went, you know, I was pursuing a dream back then. And I had a football season to take on. I was a quarterback leading our high school football team. So I didn't want that guy sticking no long needle in my body. And, you know, so I went all about my business and just kept swinging, man.
So did that bother you at all? Like, because you went on to have obviously a successful career in the minors. You made it up to the majors. And while you didn't have a super long career, you know, you were up there for a couple years. So did that affect you at all while you were playing?
You know, I really don't know. Before I was diagnosed with the FSGS, when I was a very young child, say three, 4, 5 years old, I was diagnosed with another awfully long word called hypogammaglobulinemia. And sorry,
wow, that's a mouthful.
It is. And I don't have a shortcut for that one, man. But it's a condition where your body doesn't produce the gamma globulin that our bodies need to fight off infections. and it also is an energy source for us. So back in those days, the remedy for that was a big old shot with a long needle and a big old tank of something going in there. It made your buttocks feel like it was going to explode. but come along about age 12 or 13, they said, well, we think you've outgrown that. So they stopped giving me these shots. And like I said, off again, I went to play ball. And quite frankly, I think possibly the FSGS might have been started as a result of the hypogam that I was diagnosed with earlier, but nobody knows. And I didn't know about it. I didn't care. I was playing ball, and I don't know that it had any impact. And so I'm not going to make up any lies and say it did, or I'd hit 600 home runs.
I can respect the humbleness there. So let me ask you this. Ultimately, you had to end up getting a kidney transplant. So how long after you stopped playing did you end up having that procedure?
Well, I had a shoulder injury after I was traded to Kansas City, be starting catcher here. I was traded for a young man named David Cone.
I think I heard of him.
Yeah.
In West Virginia, y'all heard of that?
I had to Google it.
Well, you know, when I got called there, you know, coming off the World Series years, and we're in spring training 87, and I got the phone call about 5 days left spring training. It had been rumored that Kansas City or San Diego was looking to trade for me to be their starting catcher. And I, you know, you just never know what's going to go on. I just gone about my business. And as it turned out, I got a call about 5 days left. And Joe McElvain, the assistant general manager at the time, said, you know, you're heading to Kansas City. We trade for you. I said, well, okay, well, who'd you get for me? And he said, AAA pitcher, Dave Cone, something. I said, is that all you got for me? Ain't no lie, man. Honest engine. John Gibbons, my former teammate back then, manager of the Blue Jays, him and his wife were over having some snook from one of our previous fishing trips.
All right.
And got the call, and I was traded, had shoulder injury. And I battled to come back from that shoulder injury for about 2.5 years, and I guess I was out of the game about 1990. And by the end of 1991, I was on dialysis and had my first kidney transplant rather quickly. Jeez. In about 3 or 4 weeks after going on donor list, which was crazy amazing. Because the donor list, they told me it's going to be at least a year and a half, 2 years, maybe more. So honestly, the day that they called, another phone story, I guess, but my wife was out and I had just been to the chief draft party over here at the stadium. Back when they were picking number one all the time for all the wrong reasons. But the phone rang, and I said, this woman said, yes, sir, how would you like to get a kidney tonight? And I thought, my first thought was somebody's pulling a prank on me, you know, with my friends or something. But I'd only been on the list about 3-4 weeks. And I said, sure, I'd like some sausage and pepperoni on that. And do you deliver, by the way, right? Well, this lady was calling from the, you know, organ donor list. And so when she repeated herself again, I knew she was serious and I needed to get serious. And lo and behold, the next day I was transplanted. A young man was killed in Fort Riley, Kansas. He was serving his country there and was on leave. And him and a buddy, he got killed in a car accident. So that was my first of three kidney transplants that I've had now.
Yeah, so I was going to get into that. So you've had three kidney transplants. So one of the things when I was, you know, just kind of reading about your story and everything you've gone through, you know, not only the transplants, but like you have been kind of dealt a hand where you had to take like a huge amount of medication. Is that an understatement? I mean, I read somewhere where you might have been taking up to 50 different things a day. Is that right?
Yes, sir. It's been an interesting journey from that day in May of 1992, and I had that first transplant. With some exception, I've taken probably 35 to 45 pills a day. And, you know, initially, the main thing that all that was for was to keep the body from rejecting the transplant.
Sure.
But then as we all know, medications, they seem to have bad effects on you. And so then you start having to take other meds to battle the side effects of the primary medication. So, and then I've had, you know, I've got a pretty extensive medical history, so lots of issues going on. So they just stuff pills down you and off I went, man.
So with a combination of having to go through multiple kidney transplants and, you know, having to take all the medication and dealing with all the stuff you already had before, like how low did this take you? Like, how were you able to deal with all this?
Well, it was a bit challenging, quite frankly. The side effects of medication, transplant medications have, there's just a multitude of side effects, and each person that is put on these beds reacts differently. Some people have grow long chest hairs. I got that one. Other people have tremors. Other people have, like me, I came down with mood swings and depression. And a year and a half later, after that first transplant, I was down as far as you can go. I went to my basement, had a loaded 357 Magnum pistol, and I was contemplating on quitting. So, you talk about hitting bottom. I would, I try to frame everything pretty positively. At that time, I actually did. I came out of there alive, and I came out of there with a game plan to turn my life around, and I believe I have. I know I have. And unfortunately, I've had the opportunity after turning my life around to help other people in many different ways in the last 20, 25 years. So it's, when I was in that basement, that's about as low as it gets. And I call it today, because I try to make light of everything. I went from the penthouse to the outhouse and now back.
That's 100% right. Like, and so many people can be in that same situation and they don't have that outcome. So, I mean, props to you for being able to come through that. And like, I haven't even got to, like, there's more. Like, Mr. Brown doesn't know all this. He's kind of hearing this for the first time, but like, you had skin cancer on top of all this too, right?
Well, yeah, Mr. Brown, and you don't realize, I've had, so many skin cancers. I've had over 45 at this point, and it lost count, actually, 45 Mohs surgeries, having cancer, having been removed. And one of those times it reoccurred and came back highly aggressive up near my left ear temple area. And I ended up having to do 30 rounds of radiation to slow it down. And that's caused some issues in my mouth dentally. And it's just, it seems like that big snowball gets rolling. It's kind of hard to turn around once in a while. But, the skin cancers, I kind of get a chuckle when people get skin cancer. And, oh, my goodness, I remember my mother got skin cancer one day when I was a little boy. She came and her and my dad were crying. And, oh, my God, she thought she was dying for sure. But back, that's 30-something, 40 years ago. And they certainly made tremendous progress in handling these types of situations. I've been fortunate, knock on wood, that I haven't had any melanoma, which is the most dangerous type of skin cancer. But I've had this, the second most challenging is squamous cell, and almost exclusively mine have been all squamous cells. So that's actually my weight loss program. I just go to Mohs surgery, get the weight cut off of me, man.
See, when you have that attitude, this is why you're still kicking, right?
Well, that's right, man. You got to have that attitude because, life's going to throw you some curves, man. You just got to step in the box and keep swinging.
Yeah, somebody wrote a book that said that.
No kidding. I'll be done. Well, he's a smart fellow, I'll bet.
So are you cancer-free now?
Oh, I don't know. I got a cut here on the back of my elbow. It's about 5 inches long. It's got staples in it, and he said he got it off. Oh, I don't know. It's just routine. I go see the guy as a surgeon. I don't go to dermatologist any longer. He wanted me to come right to him every 3 months. And, so he just gave me a big old zipper in the back of my arm, 5 inches. He lied and said it was 4 inches. And my wife put a measure on and said it was 5. And I said, well, honey, I know I appreciate your measurements because you always have exaggerated me a little bit.
So, best of luck as you continue going through all those battles there. And I guess one of the questions, I'm going to tie this into something that, I'd kind of learned that you become renowned for, and that's your motivational speaking prowess. So you were actually awarded the Certified Speaking Profession designation from the National Speakers Association. So congratulations on that honor. So, when you get called to do a speaking engagement or you get called to, have this type of talk with a group of people about perseverance or whatever it may be, what's that message typically consist of? I mean, given your experience.
Well, ultimately, every time it consists of some of my story. which part of my story I tell or what parts of it I tell really are chosen by myself after I talk to the group I'm speaking to. I mean, I've spoken to probably, I can't tell you how many groups. I used to do 80 to 90 a year back, like 10 years ago, back around the early 2000s for several years. But I have a form called the Scouting Report that I send to the folks I'm going to speak to. And I ask them a number of questions. I say, why'd you pick me to speak to your group? And that gives me a lot of the answers to what they need to hear. You know, back when I was first starting to speak back in the mid-90s, it was all about that climbing the mountain, paying the price, perseverance, overcoming challenges on your way to the top, success, all those things, leadership, teamwork. But, you know, as a culture, we faced a lot of change here in this country. And probably around early 2000s, I had a lot of people starting to ask me to talk about that subject. And it's something I know a little bit about, you know, having gone from the penthouse to the outhouse and back, as I said earlier. But, you know, I faced a fair amount of stuff. And so I think that's probably one of the major themes is change and handling change and challenges. And my answers are often the things I tell people a lot about are you know, to keep swinging. You got to keep stepping in the batter's box. It sounds cliche-ish, but I think perspective is a very important thing. How you look at your situation and how you see yourself. And, you know, people talk about in our business world, think outside the box. Well, you know, a box is about as useless as carrying a little something around in the mail maybe, but I say, think outside the self. That's my slogan, because that's when you're going to get a good perspective. When you think about other people and you stop thinking about yourself so darn much and have a big old pity party. Because we all have pity parties, and I'll be first. I got a great story about midnight shift nurse when she came in my room the night 4 days after that first kidney transplant, and she rattled my cage. And I've had nurses say, oh, she shouldn't have done that. She could have gotten fired. I say, I thank God that woman came in because she gave me some perspective. And she helped me to stop feeling sorry for myself and realize that I had received the gift of life. And I took that lesson and many others along the way. And I've come up with this philosophy that you got to think outside yourself. You know, put others first. And it's just like, you know, a lot of people say, well, I can't speak. I get so nervous. Oh. You know, I mean, it's the second biggest fear that we have in America is speaking. I said, that's crazy. You know why you get nervous in front of a group? Because you're thinking about yourself. It ain't about me and how am I doing.
That's
you know what? You know, back in communications class or whatever it was, back in 6th, 7th, 8th grade, maybe you didn't get that far, but Mr. Brown, but back then they used to tell him, Mr. Brown, that, you know, if you're up there standing in front of noise, you think of them in their underwear or something or worse, and that'll take your mind off you. Well, you know, that ain't no need to. All you got to do is look out in that audience and know without a shadow of a doubt that people need, they want to either be inspired, they want to laugh, they want to think, and they don't want you wasting your time. So you think about them. But in order to help people, you got to find out what they need first. So that goes back to my scout report. I find out what's going on, where they at, what they need the most. You know, as a catcher in baseball, I learned handling 15, 20 different pitchers during season. That sometimes you got to pat them on the butt. Sometimes you got to spank them on the butt. You know, and it's just you got to know what you're dealing with. And that was actually one of my favorite parts of the game. It's also now one of my favorite parts of getting in front of an audience is knowing what they need and read that audience before I get out there. Then I don't have to rely on somebody banging on a can to know what I need to pitch, right? Oop, I mean, never mind. Sorry,
I was going to ask you about that later. Don't worry. So, but you're right. Know your audience 100%, and I can appreciate, you know, kind of your thought process going through, you know, what it takes to be that good speaker and what it is to be a motivational speaker. So we're talking about a guy who's essentially saying, you know, be selfless. You know, don't think about yourself. Think about others. So, you know, surviving multiple bouts of cancer, multiple kidneys, which is so odd. Most people get one kidney transplant. This guy gets three. You know, having a date with a 357, then deciding that that's not worth it and ends up, you know, becoming kind of, you know, a guy on a mission here to make a difference with other people. So I wanted to ask you about the Bottom of the Ninth Foundation, because I know you got a little something to do with that. So what all goes into that organization?
Well, right about time I was losing my first transplant, going to the second transplant, I had some people talk about they wanted to sponsor me in my speaking that I do in churches or in youth groups, that sort of type stuff, share my faith. And so, you know, they wanted me to put together this nonprofit that was about, sharing your faith all the time. And that's just, I believe that we can share our faith and let the light shine through without having to go to some church. You don't have to go to some pancake breakfast or father, son, or men's breakfast to talk about your faith. More importantly, you don't have to go there to show people your faith. So I just didn't want to do that. And then finally, I was speaking in California back in about 1998, and I spoke for a group that was doing school curriculum. They would develop school curriculum for different schools around the country, but they were doing a special thing. They were doing two types of curriculum, and it wasn't for everybody. The first side was character-based curriculum. And then the other side was wide open, full gospel curriculum, faith-based curriculum. Maybe they weren't trying to hide anything, but they used the word character to kind of slip it in there on that other stuff. And I said to myself, man, that's me. I already knew it was the bottom of the ninth in America. I mean, everybody talks about the slippery slope and we're going downhill, all this sort of thing. You know, I just tell people it's the bottom of the ninth. We better turn this thing around. And when that character word popped into my brain from those folks, it was easy from there. Because then, see, I can use the word character and I can create four different project areas, which I did, based on a baseball diamond. First base is the youth with character. And within that project area, I can do anything I want with youth. I mean, I don't have to talk about God or anything, but I will definitely talk about character. Second base is, you know, this started because of the journey that I've been on. It's called The Character to Conquer. And that's for chronically ill patients, their families, and those who care for them, which is very important, those who care for them. Because I've learned here in the last 8 years how important that is when our son got cancer and still fighting a pretty ugly battle. He's in remission, but it's still a battle. Third base, I think you guys appreciate, is the Character of the Great Outdoors. And that evolved from the opportunity that I've had my whole life. And as our son grew up being a little boy and he could step out in the woods with me, we were hooked at sides in the outdoors. And I think it's a great place. So many people don't understand how great it is out there and that God has created this magnificent outdoor world for us to enjoy. And it's so fascinating for me to be able to have the opportunity to take a wounded warrior or a young child or somebody who doesn't have a dad, maybe take them out in the woods, sometimes take it with dad. And sometimes it's 12 hours, sometimes it's 48 hours. And, you know, it's funny with the parents. I don't let them take cell phones. No digital connection to the outside world.
Yes.
Yes, sir. And you know what? Invariably, it's the adult going, oh, my goodness, I haven't been without my cell phone now. It's been, oh, my, let me look. Oh, that's 34 hours and 22 minutes. Oh, my goodness. And I said, how does that feel? And they go, wow. I said, that's God's great outdoors for you right there. So, and then home plate is something that I did want to do when that fellow wanted me to share my faith more. And it's called the Character of Christ, the Character of Faith. And that's home plate. So I have four project areas, and, you know, I'm not an asker, and I'm not a builder. So it's never become anything real huge. But you know, when I go out speaking now, all the money goes to the bottom of the ninth, and we turn around that and multiply the impact with that in different project areas. And so, you know, not only the people that are getting to hear me in person, but other people are getting impacted through these various different nonprofit programs that we have. And it's just, I don't know. It's kind of like old Robin Hood. Wasn't that about what he did?
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe without the actual theft part. It sounds like you're doing a good job getting it pretty legitimate, though. So congratulations on that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I was just going to ask you, like, because for me, which you touched on the outdoors, fishing. I never really got into hunting, but because you know I didn't have a dad around growing up, kind of like you mentioned. But fishing, I picked it up on my own, so I love fishing in the outdoors. And my other passion is baseball. So I saw that you did the fantasy camp here recently. I think you got to hang out with Doc and Mookie Wilson, I believe, here recently. So
got to hang out with me.
Well, there you go. So tell us a little bit what that's like, and because I've always been interested in maybe doing one. I don't know what all it entails.
Well, that's fantasy camp. We have 2 weeks of it down at the Port St. Lucie spring training site of the Mets. We utilize the minor league clubhouse. We have 120 guys come down for 2 weeks. 1 week is one set of guys. Next week we do it all again. So we do about 240 guys a spring down there, and it's a phenomenal program. The fantasy camps have been going on for a long, long time around baseball. And if you haven't had a chance to do one with your favorite club, I would say you're missing out. I mean, these guys that come down to the Mets fantasy camp are some of the biggest fans there is in baseball. And so you'd have to go with the Chiefs then, right? Is that what you're saying, Mr. Brown? You have to go with the Chiefs for that chop. I see. You got a chop going there. Okay.
What's funny about that is he's a Raiders fan too, so you just double burned him.
Oh, he's terrible. Oh, boy. All right, Chad. Well, let's talk some more then.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Mr. Brown, it would be a great opportunity for you to go and find out what a real sports team's like then. If you're a Braves guy and a Raiders fan, man alive. So, yeah, so you need to fulfill a real fantasy, man. Go to a real team's camp, and you get your brand-new uniform with blue pinstripes and some orange colors in it, brand-new hat, just like the pros wear, man. And then we put you out there, and you can pretend to be us, New York Mets guys. Now, I can't imagine anybody, probably Oakland don't have one unless it's in a jail set. The Raiders, is that what you like?
Well, yeah,
the
Raiders, now, yeah. Right?
That's right. I don't know where they're at because everybody kicks them out. Because their fantasy camp, when they did used to have it, it was in some jail cell, what I understand.
Oh, you have no idea how deep those cuts are right now. He is above every – he's a huge sports fan, but when you start talking about the Braves and when you specifically start going to another NL East team with superiority, it hurts you.
Hold on. I'm not worried.
Let Mr. Brown in there.
I'm not worried about – I agree with you with the Raiders and the Chiefs. I have nothing to talk about. It's easy when you got Mahomes under center. I can't say nothing. But with the Mets and the Braves, even though Bakota predicted the Mets to win this year, which is beyond delusional, the Braves are obviously going to win the third straight year in a row. So I'm not really worried about the Mets. But the Chiefs are another story. So congrats with the Chiefs, by the way.
Well, thank you, Mr. Brown. I appreciate you giving it up for the Chiefs there. I know that's hard for you to do. But I want to tell you, I might agree with you on your predictions for this coming year in baseball. I don't want to get away from fantasy camp, but that might be a fantasy right there. But, no, in reality, though, the Mets have got a really strong club this year. And down to fantasy camp, we divide these guys up into 10 teams. And they all think they're going to win the championship, too. And I'm telling you, I mean, it is hilarious. But we get some good players. We don't allow – they got to be over 35 to pitch just because, you know, we have guys playing up to 75 years old coming down.
Okay,
and some of the guys can play. And we've got some ladies come out and play, too. We get about a half dozen ladies each week. And so it's really a good time. It is so good. The folks that run the Mets fantasy camp, I mean, us pro staff, it's a week of work. I mean, we're in there having meetings at 8:30 and then we're out on the field for two games each day and play a championship usually under the lights on Thursday night. And every night of the week, you're doing something. First week, the team takes the coaches out. So you get to know each other, get to hear some stories and, you know, some up close and personal with your coaches. And then Tuesday night they have Tuesday night is barbecue and bull, so you guys would be good on that one, right? But the voice of the Mets comes down, and we all after we eat some good barbecue, we have a bull session. They just answer; they can ask us anything they want. Matter of fact, Howie Rose, before we start every session, barbecue and bull, he says, "Folks, as I've told you every year since I've been coming down here doing this." You need to turn off your cell phones, recorders, cameras, videos. There's none of that. because you might hear some things here tonight. Guys are going to open up and tell you the real deal. And the guys respect that. You'll never see any cameras Absolutely. Videos going off because they would throw them right on out of there.
Well, but that, the guys that gives everybody candid responses, hopefully.
Exactly.
And what stays in the clubhouse type of thing, so exactly. they get to experience that.
Exactly. It's a real fantasy camp, right? That's how we do it.
Exactly, yeah. So then, you know, I mean, the next night they got Kangaroo Court. That'd be good for the Raiders guys. Shoot, we'd never get out of there. So that was the Raiders. Oh, sorry, Mr. Brown. So we're doing something every night. Thursday night's a big cocktail, fancy Italian restaurant. And then on Friday, after they play that championship game Thursday night, and then we have the cocktail, they have the pro staff versus the campers day. And each team, 10 teams, gets to play three innings against us. And we're the home team, and we start off, and rarely do we get knocked off. Occasionally happens, you know, stuff happens. I mean, like the Raiders win a couple games once in a while.
That's the yeah, I hear you.
But you know, when we play them three innings each team, and this year, because the field, the main field, and the secondary field were not ready for the big team. We only had four minor league fields to play on. I mean, they're all awesome, but it's not like playing on the big field. So we changed around the format for this year, and the guys didn't get to play against us. And, of course, the pro staff's going, yo, yes, thank you. But us old guys, you know, I mean, I get shots in my knees and shots in my shoulder. I get three shots about a month before fantasy camp, so I can get out there and catch six innings. It's crazy. But, you know, the guys were all happy. The campers weren't so happy, but – you know, we did all kind of different things. We threw them live batting practice. We had some of the pitchers throwing, you know, up to almost 80 miles an hour. And these guys really get a feel for what it's really like in there. And, you know, if somebody gets a little too cocky, you know, just knock it down a little bit. And
a little brush back.
Give some chin, sure, a little chin music, you know. And, you know, I seen on we have a Facebook group, and the guys are interacting all the time. And I'll plug something in once in a while. I don't. Just to keep stir the pot a little bit, you know. And they was talking about how in a recent hockey game, what's the guy called? A zombie
Zamboni.
Guy?
Yeah, the zombie.
Zamboni, there you go. Okay, I grew up in Florida, man. I don't know about that stuff.
Hey, on that there's ice. Hockey teams in Florida now.
Well, not when I was growing up, man. So the Zamboni guy came out there, you know, and saved the game because I guess two goalies went down.
Yeah,
so they start talking on Facebook.
Goalie.
Yeah. Well, he had to go get dressed, and he got in the game, I guess, saved the game. And now the Mets fantasy camp group's going, hey, do you know, maybe that should happen in baseball.
Put you think me on the 40-man roster.
Could we do that? Yeah. And like, okay. And a couple of bros popped in there, you know, and kind of set them straight a little bit. But they really know, because at fantasy camp, that especially when they play us for three innings, they get some pretty. Yeah, I mean, we ain't in our prime, of course, but you know, we ain't as good as we once was. But you know, once we can still get it up there, right?
Hey, aren't the Mets already doing that with Tim Tebow?
You know, Mr. Brown. You know, I think, man, you hit me in the honey spot because I just saw somebody on Mets fantasy camp talking about how this guy is, you know. You know, he should get out of here, this sort of thing. But I'll tell you what, I am darn proud of Tim Tebow. The man has had a tremendous life. He's got a great story. And most importantly to me, that man is making a difference. And as long as he can play on that field and try to pursue his goals, you know, they didn't run Michael Jordan out trying to be a baseball player. And I think Tim Tebow, as long as they keep around for whatever the reason, I think I'm saying all four, because I'm just happy to know that that's one of the good guys. And I pull for the good guys. I struggle to follow sports today, quite honestly.
In all seriousness, though, you can't debate his work ethic, man, because he's staying after it, and he actually just hit his first spring training home run this week. So, I mean, I believe they was wanting him in the XFL. He didn't want to do that because he said he wanted to continue his pursuit of his baseball career. So, props to him for you know, not giving
up. I agree with Mr. Brown totally. You know, that's one of the things that talk about speaking and stuff. I just got asked a couple of days ago, you know, there's a guy playing, I guess he's played in AAA with some club, I think one of the Los Angeles teams. And I think his sister-in-law was asking him, you know, about, oh, we're trying to tell him to get it up and, you know, get a real job. And one of the main things I tell people like that, or kids, when I talk to kids, even young adults, I say, best lesson I can tell you is, don't ever get in a situation where you got to look yourself in the mirror and go, if only I had done blank.
Absolutely.
You make them tear it. If you got a dream playing professional baseball, football, you know, if you're going to be a jockey, I'm not one of those crazy optimists that says, oh, you can do anything you want. Well, that's crap. I couldn't be a jockey. I'm sorry. I will break that horse's back. But I do believe that you should go for it and not have any regret 5 years, 10 years down the road. And I'm saying that for a man like Tim Tebow, who has been a great athlete. He does a lot of things really good. And maybe, and, you know, quite frankly, you know, I ain't argue with you. You know, is he a major leaguer? No, not right now. And I doubt that he'll get to that level. I ain't saying he can't. But I tell you what, I think it's a good thing that he's getting it out of the system and going for it. As long as they let you on that field, you stay there and you keep swinging.
You know what? I think there's no better words than that right there. I 100% agree with you. And you know what? I think most people are probably just envious that they can't be in that situation. So I'm not going to knock the guy for going out there and hustling.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Chad.
So, hey, before we let you go, because we got some other things we got to tend to here this evening, I just wanted to get some quick thoughts on the Houston Astros. You briefly mentioned banging on a trash can earlier. You know, what is your reaction to this whole situation? And if you were behind the plate right now, you know, calling a game, are you going to be telling them to throw inside a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, there ain't no question there. I mean, you know, but about the Astros, look, these ain't the only guys in baseball been stealing signs. Right. It's just how they went about doing it. That's the problem. The Astros, they've been cheating since 1986. Mike Scott was scuffing that damn baseball, I'm telling you right now, because I was sitting on the bench in game three in New York, and I realized, wait, they're throwing them baseballs over to our dugout to the bat boy. Well, you know, I was no dummy. I mean, I had an appointment to West Point, to my league school, so I used my marble. I said, I'm going to go over there and check them balls out. Sure enough, one out of three, two out of four, had the same scuff mark on the same spot, right above the commissioner's logo, above the two seams there. It was the exact same thing. We collected, you know, three dozen, sent them to the commissioner. Of course, they ain't going to do anything. Just like they've been, you know, sweeping this whole thing under the rug till finally that fella comes out and says it in the public. Now they got to deal with it. You know, so, I mean, it, you know, that the Astros cheating, that don't surprise me a lick. We caught them back in 86. But guys been stealing signs forever in different ways. And more than anything, I think this whole thing started out, I believe, probably, and I don't have any evidence of this, but things I've been hearing, Carlos Beltran has admitted that he used to sit and watch video of pitchers and pick up tips that they were tipping off their pitches. Somehow they grip it a different way and put it in their glove, right, or they lift their hands higher on a curveball, break up, change it.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, I was really good at that myself. It's a great story about Billy Bean. I used to play with him in the minor leagues for two seasons. You look on his minor league record. 84 and 85, we played together, and I had hit fourth, he hit third or fourth and fifth, and I called probably 60, 70% of the pitches he got in those 2 years and the best ones he's got. And we never got caught, because if we got caught, we'd been sitting on our pants or wearing one in the ribs with some sauce on it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
At least. I mean, I personally, I'm just old school, but for what they did and whoever else did it, I would throw them out of the game just as quick as I could. That's just me. Because I think that's one of the problems in our society today. Our judicial people, they don't take care of people and get rid of them. And they just keep coming back and making more and more trouble. And it applies to baseball. It applies to football and life. You got some guys that are repeat offender, just get rid of them.
Right.
I mean, you know.
I can understand because that.
Because I can tell you, I can promise you, in 1994, this was my thinking back when they locked us out. I'm on the sidelines. I get my transplant, and I'm watching the game, and they lock us out. The players, owners, and they take away the World Series because of greed. I'm telling you right now, I was hoping that the owners had the cojones to keep them out. And if needed, you just throw them out. And I'm telling you, there is enough talent in baseball, and I think in a couple other sports, you just replace them. And in 2 years, you're going to have your superstars, because there is such a small difference between the legitimate talent playing the average major leaguer and a good AAA player is so small. And I've seen guys that I thought, there ain't no way that guy, he'd be an all-star in big league, and he never got a chance. So I said, just get rid of him, replace him, and let's go. Let's do this the right way. You know, it's always been in the game, you guys sneaking peeks, looking for second base, all this stuff. When you start doing all this other thing like that, I'm sorry. Even though they used a trash can, that was pretty old age. But now, what are you talking about? Wasn't. Yeah, I mean, talking buzzers. Now, I'd love to know that if they were using buzzers. But I mean, I also got to tell you guys honestly, hats off to them. Yeah, they were sharp.
Hey, we had Brett Boone on the show last week, and Brett said, you know, I'd like to think if I was out there playing second base and I kept noticing somebody banging on a trash can every time we were pitching, I think I'd probably be onto that pretty quick, and I think we'd be changing our signs. So, yeah, hats off to him for pulling it off, because where was everybody else getting to the bottom of it?
There you go. Well, I'll tell you this, too. Fantasy camp, there's a fellow that goes there every year, and he's involved with Major League Baseball in New York. And he brought down a protege of a watch that they are seriously thinking about implementing. That the catcher, pitcher, whatever, and it's had different systems, and he showed it to us staff guys. And it was sad, honest to God. I was so sad to see this. But the truth is, it's a reality. And, you know, they're going to combat this with – I mean, where are we going to be in 5 years, 10 years? Digital strike zone, everything digital. No. I mean, what happened to playing outside, sandlot baseball, having a good time? The game of baseball. They don't say go to work. They say play ball. Right?
That's right. That's 100% right. Hey, Ed, we share that sentiment, brother. We're right there with you.
I know you guys do, because y'all good men. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed talking with you guys.
Well, don't spread lies about us. We're not that good. But, hey, we appreciate you joining us tonight. And, you know, definitely look forward to staying in touch and hearing more about many, many more Mets fantasy camps, hopefully in the future. But, brother, we appreciate you giving us that time. And we're going to get to the rest of the show. But thank you so much, man. We appreciate you, Ed.
Y'all keep swinging. It's been a pleasure, my honor. Take care, man.
All right. See you, bye. All right, I feel like we didn't give our best effort tonight. Is that fair to say?
Some of us tried.
I'm not saying we didn't try, but as Yoda once said, do or do not, there is no try.
Well, some of us do not, I guess is the right thing.
You did not.
Some of us did not.
Is that right? You're insinuating that about me?
I didn't say any names. Let's just say you're a 5.5 on my hotness scale.
That's better than Jennifer Aniston at a 5 flat. So I know that we did a Facebook Live video and we ate some bugs. And I'm not real proud about that. It probably could have gone better. And I ate a larvae.
Looks like a mealworm.
It looked like a mealworm. And mealworms are like the weirdest looking bugs ever.
With your trout lips.
It couldn't have been nearly as bad as you made it out to be.
Dude.
He sold it.
I'm not going to lie. It's all in the head. I can't deal with it. You guys, especially you, Biggs, props and hats off to you for eating some chocolate covered unnamed insects.
Hey, I went first, by the way.
But you had the cricket, right?
No, but I took the plunge
you
first.
You did. You just went right in kind of casually, like I wasn't even ready for it. But what I'm saying is he ate the chocolate-covered ones. We didn't even know what they were.
And he ate the white chocolate.
That wasn't chocolate.
Yeah. No preferences. I went black and white. The creamy goodness you'd advertised, but I'd probably do it again.
I'm not the one that termed creamy goodness. That was Mr. Brown last week.
Yeah.
The consensus was that stuff was not as good as what you would get at Safeco or whatever that field is called. T-Mobile Park, is that what it is? Not as good, right? We don't know. We've not been there, but that's what we want to do. We're trying to gear up for a road trip to Seattle just so we can get some fried grasshoppers.
Absolutely.
This is a disaster. I feel like we failed kind of filling the void of eating bugs. I don't want to do that again. Don't make me eat bugs again. I know I only ate one of those mealworms, but I'm not happy doing that. I just want to know, are you guys doing anything this weekend? What's on the docket for you guys?
I want to watch the XFL.
So our team lost.
Yeah, I saw that.
Because they played that gauntlet, that sold-out crowd at L.A., the Wildcats. Ever since they fired Pepper Johnson, they've been on a tear. I don't think I'm watching that. I'm actually off Friday and Saturday. I think I'm just going to go up to that cabin for a couple days. I'm serious.
Nice. Don't take your phone.
I won't. I'm going to follow Ed Hearn's advice. I'm going to go up there, leave my phone behind, see if I can get somewhere in the wilderness. I might even go to Snowshoe. Who knows?
Don't take your phone. I got the page covered, okay?
I'm sure you do. I mean, I don't contribute a whole lot anymore anyway. But you know what? We appreciate Ed Hearn joining us this evening. We had some fun talking to him. Make sure you check out that entire interview. But overall, I feel like it's been a disaster. But you know what? We hope you stick with us. Sometimes we're not as crisp and clean as we'd like to be, but we will do our best to make sure we at least sound that way whenever you guys listen to this tomorrow. Biggie, do you got any parting words you want to give us?
Train wreck, carry an oil tanker.
Your unbridled enthusiasm is what gets me through each day, sir. Thank you so much. You know what, though? We got some good guests still coming up. We're getting right into the heart of baseball season. We got some baseball card collectors. We got some guys who's writing books about people getting caught up from the minors all the way to the pros. And we got a serious XM fantasy baseball expert coming on the show here soon. So make sure you check us out each and every Thursday night, Friday morning for new shows. This has been the We Don't Know Sports Podcast. And please subscribe and don't hate us.